military veterans, and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
Inside the mind of the Yorkshire Ripper, the final investigation is the fullest possible account of the crimes of Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, including those that he was not charged with and has never previously been connected to. It is a new work by Chris Clark and Tim Hicks, which throws a light on the activities of Peter Sutcliffe and puts forward the idea, the fact that there are some other killings out there which he was not held accountable for. I'm delighted to be joined live on the line from the UK by both Chris Clark and Tim Hicks as well. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Giles.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. Tim, let's start off with the idea because, you know, I was a schoolboy in the 70s, late 70s in the Midlands, and I remember the terror that my mum and her friends had about going out and driving on the M6 or going down to the M1 or whatever, because it struck fear into the population, didn't it, on a way that never happened before.
That is so. I was also a schoolboy in the 1970s, not in the Midlands. And you could, even from where I was living, you could tell the fear that he inflicted on West Yorkshire and Manchester, even from then. There's never been anything like it before or since. And he was subsequently convicted of 13 murders, stranger murders of women. And it is unquestionably the most notorious case since the end of the Second World War in Britain. Our interest was piqued by media reports linking Sutcliffe, however, to attacks in Europe. Mm. And when we started working on the book, we determined that we would investigate this very, very thoroughly. And our investigation, in fact, has confirmed our view that Sutcliffe was operating not just in West Yorkshire and Manchester, but also in Europe. We know that he was a married man, and his wife and he had a very trusting relationship, and so she would routinely allow him to go for days on end in his car and just go for a run out. And to this day, nobody knows where he went or what he did. He was an excellent driver, very confident. He was a mechanic. He had route planning skills. Chris was traveling back and forth to the UK, from the UK to Europe at this time, using the ferries and the hovercrafts. And he has confirmed that the service was excellent. It only took a couple of hours. And that meant that we established very quickly that he could easily have gone into Europe on these runs out using the ferry service. We then looked at his foreign travel, and we know that in 1974, he traveled to Paris with his wife for their honeymoon. In 1975, he went to Prague with his wife to visit her relatives there. She was of Czech origin. And then they flew to Rome in 1975. Now, this established that he had a passport from at least 1974 onwards. Passports are issued for 10 years. So that means that from at least 1974 until his arrest in 1981, he had a valid UK passport. Now, Sutcliffe had a hobby. It was his interest. He enjoyed visiting red light districts. And we know that he visited about nine in the UK at one time or the other, which is very unusual. And within the ferry ports of Europe, there are red light districts. And there are also major red light districts in Paris, Marseille, Rotterdam, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, and Hamburg. And that would have given him a motivation to go there. We also know that he was a very devoted uncle to his nephew and to his sister's children, Maureen. She was married to a regular soldier, and in 1975, his brother-in-law was posted into the British Army of the Rhine in Germany, and this gave him a motivation to visit them regularly, as he had done when they were in Duxford. So all of this amounts to a good reason to visit Europe. He had the means and he had the time to do it. And then moving into the cases, the three cases that he's so far been identified. Oh, before we do that, we know it is possible that when he was in Paris, Prague, and Rome, Paris and Rome have red light districts. Prague at this time had prostitution, but didn't have it so overtly because it was under the communist regime. It's possible that he could have slipped away from his wife just to go out for a drink on his own one evening and committed an attack in the red light districts in Paris or Rome. And then turning to the cases, the other issue which we have is that there are no attacks attributed to Sutcliffe in the UK in August 1977, June, July and August 1978, and in July 1979 in the summer months when he would have had a holiday from his work. He and Sonia did not go on holiday abroad, so when he took his holiday, he was at home and therefore free to roam. And our concern is that although serial killers do sometimes have extended periods between attacks, given the short interval between some of Sutcliffe's attacks, these gaps could indicate that there are other visits to Europe and victims there which have not been linked to him.
One of the things that strikes me is just reeling off some of those cities that you're saying. Okay, not Prague or Rome or Paris, but Rotterdam, Hamburg. These are big port cities. You can get in and out with red light districts. So he could if he's used to going on ferries, as Chris said, you know, you use ferries and the hovercraft yourself, he could literally be over in less than 24 hours in Hamburg, for example.
Yeah.
Do attack and then be back, because this is the lowest strata. Of course, this is the 70s. This is before a lot of people are realizing why people are being trafficked and whatever, going into prostitution, street prostitution, or whatever. He can be out, strike, and be back before anybody, and nobody really kind of cares.
I'm afraid to say that you're correct on that. If the ferry routes, the ferry ports, existence of large red light districts allowed him to do exactly that. And with the murder of in Gothenburg, I think of Teresa Torsen, that's exactly what happened. And I will come on to that in a minute. And also, I'm sorry to say this, but prostitute murders in the UK, and I suspect in the continental countries, were not very well investigated because they were stranger murders and it was virtually impossible to tie them down. And so certainly in the UK, there was very little police effort put into them until in 1975, when they started connecting the murders to Peter Sutcliffe. And then if we just return to the three attacks where he has been linked, the first one was in 1978, which was the murder of a British woman, Carol Reeves. Now, Carol and her husband, John, went to Hyères in the south of France, just next to Marseille, for a diving holiday. Her husband went diving at a beach 4 miles away while Carol sunbathed. He came back, she was gone, and the police told him that she'd been killed. And there were two French post-mortem examinations which showed that Carol had been beaten around the head, which is a Sutcliffe indicator, and then an attempt had been made to strangle her, which is a Sutcliffe indicator. And then her body had been concealed by being rolled over the side of the jetty onto rocks below. Very similar in some respects to when he attacked poor Tracy Brown and threw her over a wall. The French police initiated a murder investigation, and nobody has ever been brought to book for that murder. And the first that cropped up that Carol was linked to Sutcliffe was in 1981, when the investigative journalist, the leading investigative journalist of the time, linked her to him, and on the basis that the modus operandi was absolutely similar, that it was a sexual attack, and poor Mrs. Reeves had had her bikini top lifted up to show her breasts, which is another Sutcliffe indicator. And we've examined this, and we think that the modus operandi fits. Sutcliffe, at this time, from 1975 onwards, was working as a lorry driver, and his work was for a firm of a transport firm that was specialist in engineering goods. And he routinely delivered to ports in the UK at Peterhead, Harwich, Dover, and Sunderland. And we think that either he was delivering to Marseille in his lorry, had done his full amount of miles on the tachograph and stayed overnight, possibly failed to make an attack in Marseille, and then attacked Carol at Hayer on the way back, or possibly he was on a run out. Now, unfortunately, this case had become clouded because the British autopsy in the UK concluded that it was accidental death. We've looked at the at the autopsy report, and Chris, who has had experience of dealing with a murder case where somebody was thrown over a cliff, has concluded that it's impossible for it to be accidental death because all of the injuries were on the head, and the bruising from the ligature after about 3 weeks will have disappeared. So by the time the UK autopsy was conducted, there would have been no sign of the ligature strangulation. And so as a result of a failed or suspect UK autopsy, this case has never been pursued by the British police, and it is still open with the French police.
Just want to come on to, just because we might just run out of time and we haven't heard from Chris yet, but just quickly, Gothenburg. I haven't heard this. I mean, Sweden. You can imagine, say, in continental Europe, you can kind of, he can be there and back quickly. And is this another international lorry trip, do we think? Or is it a quote unquote free time trip? Because that's a considerable way away from the mainland, from UK anyway.
Good question. Gothenburg is not a major port. It has a direct ferry route to the UK. So again, coming to your earlier question, he could have been in and out. And while he was the case there is that of Gertie Jensen, 31, who's a sex worker there. Her naked body was found on a demolition site at about 7 o'clock on the 12th of August, Tuesday, the 12th of August, 1980. The back of her skull had been bashed in with a brick Sutcliffe indicator, and he had used bricks which were close to hand to commit murders. So that fits perfectly with his modus operandi and with this in and out transport that you have identified. And so if that murder had happened in the UK, it would have been straight away flashed up as a potential Ripper attack. And then Teresa Torling was a sex worker in Malmo, which again is not a major port, but it doesn't have a direct route to the UK, so it would have taken him longer. And this became problematic for us. The modus operandi fits perfectly. And then we went back through Sutcliffe's personal life, and we found two things which we believe tie him to this murder. The first thing is that Sutcliffe's wife's grandmother flew from Prague to the UK to see her daughter and granddaughter. And Sutcliffe's wife and his mother-in-law and his mother's granddaughter all went off on holiday for a week and a half. And that gave him a week and a half in the summer where he wasn't with his wife and could do what the hell he pleased. And on top of that, we know that he was aware by that time that all of the red light districts that he normally attacked in were under close observation by the police and were too hot for him. And we think that he moved his changed his area of operations to Malmo. He was able to, because he had this window of opportunity, he was able to go there and commit the murder.
This opens up a whole new, because we just think that it's UK based, but in the minds of the deranged minds of a serial killer, which Sutcliffe is, the whole world is if you like, is his playing field, and I use that word advisedly. And so it makes perfect sense that he doesn't care where he's going to strike, and if the red light districts in the UK are being monitored, then there is mainland Europe to for him to carry out these despicable attacks. Chris, what is your relationship then with the book itself and with Tim?
Well, I've been researching Peter Sutcliffe for over a decade. I've already had one book, Yorkshire Ripper, The Secret Murders, published. This book is a new one with 9 new victims and a number of women and children who escaped Peter Sutcliffe's clutches, first-hand accounts. If I could just mention the Europe thing before we leave it.
Yeah.
Carl Sutcliffe's younger brother, was quoted in the Daily Mirror in 2016 that he should be investigated for murders in Italy and Germany, which covers what Tim said earlier, the Rome visit and the Rhine.
You just said children as well. What are we talking about? Attacks on children? What is that? Because that's, again, that's a new one for many of our listeners.
Well, the children have come forward who are women now, two who were abducted in Hammersmith in London and taken by Sutcliffe in his lorry to Sunderland, who narrowly escaped an attack. There was a schoolgirl in Leicestershire, and actually Leicester itself, who came out of school. Sutcliffe's lorry was parked on the opposite side of the road, and Sutcliffe basically chased her down her street to where she lived, and she luckily evaded him by going into her house and then saw him pacing up and down outside her window. And as I say, we have 9 unsolved murders that have never been investigated.
That's basically
before.
What 21, 22 murders then are we looking at now on that case?
I think we're talking about a total of 41.
41, excuse me.
A total, wow. Including the 13 murders that he's been convicted of.
That's shocking. So, Chris, you've done this before. Were you aware, or did you have suspicions that he may have been carrying out attacks in other countries because of the nature, A, of his work, and B, the time that he was allowed to be absent from his wife?
Yes, I mean, specifically, we're talking about, as Tim said, 2 visits to Europe by plane from Heathrow, and also his continental driving. We know he used Harwich to Zeebrugge. In fact, we've got 2 murders that we're looking at in the Harwich area, and one where the body has never been found, and the inference is he took her across in his lorry and dumped her in Holland or the Low Countries.
Is this an attempt to basically to bring closure then to these to it's not to sensationalize, but it is to bring closure to the families, to the friends, of these poor women who were victimized?
Yes, so the whole point of the exercise is justice and some form of closure for the people left behind, and also for the people who narrowly missed being yet another victim.
Did Sutcliffe ever say anything about you? I mean, and he was reticent, wasn't he? He didn't confess to much. Did he mention Europe at all during any time during his incarceration or his trial?
No, I mean, he was a compulsive liar. I mean, in the Tracy Brown case, he hit her with a ball-peen hammer a number of times. And when he's actually on an interview on YouTube saying he hit her with the branch of a tree and she walked like a prostitute. I mean, this was a 14-year-old schoolgirl who lived in a small village in West Yorkshire, down a narrow lane, you know. And so he was a compulsive liar. The only ones he admitted to were ones he knew the police had enough to charge him, and he went down the road of mad, bad, and sad.
Tim, just thinking, I mean, when you start looking at these, it must have been shocking, and I mean that in a row, because it suddenly... The Yorkshire Ripper case, as we was at the beginning of the interview, we said was bad enough, but this adds a whole new level onto his notoriety. And I'm not going to glamorize him, but in terms of the despicable actions that he carried out,
yes, it does. I think that you're now looking at the strategic question. We believe that officially his first attack was that he was convicted of. I think it was in February 1975. We believe that his first murder of a woman was in 1964 in Halifax. And that is not to go for sensationalism. That's our conclusion. It's stacked up by evidence. It demonstrates, first of all, just how ruthless, but also, I'm sorry to say it, capable he was. Secondly, how completely ineffective the CID branch, the detective branch of the British Police Service, was at cross-force in investigations. It was a very tough book to write, because as we kept digging, we kept discovering more and more. And because it's been done by two authors, we've been able to look at it more dispassionately, and one will say, no, I'm not happy about including this. We have excluded murders that he's been connected to because of a lack of evidence. And the book tries now to put, which is why we've called it the ultimate investigation, to give as full an account of what actually happened as possible in a dispassionate way. We hope that it will give the victims and friends of the victims, particularly those where no one has ever been convicted, some degree of closure in the knowledge that it probably was Sutcliffe and he was arrested. Because if I had a daughter or a sister or a wife or a girlfriend that was murdered, that would be bad enough. The thing which would really eat me up is the knowledge that the person that did it had never been brought to book for it. But the third objective of the book is to identify the failures in the investigation, which are still being made. The British Police Service are still making the same mistakes as they did in 1975, so that there can be reform of the way the British police particularly investigate cross-border serial offenders, both killers and rapists.
If you think about it, you know, again, we've said vulnerable women at the lowest point of society, i.e. sex workers, international cross border crime. It is, if you like, if you don't want to be detected, it is perhaps the easiest crimes to facilitate, Tim.
I would agree with that completely. We know that Sutcliffe followed the course of the investigation in the press. He varied his modus operandi. He was forensically aware. He was surveillance aware. And as you said earlier in the interview, there is no reason at all why he should observe rules of engagement which limited him to Manchester and West Yorkshire. In fact, it was within his best interests to move his operations overseas and to other parts of the country. And in this context, it's worth remembering that he was actually arrested in South Yorkshire, a part of the country that he'd never been associated with.
Unfortunately, gentlemen, we're going to run out of time, which I feared might happen, because it's an absolute, it's honestly just so many horrendous possibilities have opened up. But thank you so much for joining me today. The book is called Inside the Mind of the Yorkshire Ripper, The Final Investigation. It's by Chris Clark and also by Tim Hooks, who we're speaking to today. Gentlemen, if people want to find out more about the book, is there a website? Where can they find you?
My own website is www.armchairdetective.org.uk.
And Tim, have you got a website, please?
Yes, if you just look up the North Yorks Inquirer, which is the paper I write for, and send in a contact to letters, particularly if you are...
Getting out of time, gentlemen. The book is called Inside the Mind of the Yorkshire Ripper.
military veterans, and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.